Hare Krishna, everyone. So I'm not qualified to speak about Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, especially in the presence of many senior devotees, but I'll try my best. Please give me your blessings and please tolerate my inability. When I was studying a little bit about Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, I just sort of realized the gulf of difference in this level of Krishna consciousness, and his renunciation was just breathtaking, and I felt quite inadequate to kind of talk about this topic, but we'll try. So I chose the obvious verse for this occasion, the pranam mantras. So please repeat after me. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, the spiritual master of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who is renunciation personified. He is always merged in a feeling of separation and intense love of Krishna. I always like to read some purport of Srila Prabhupada when I give a class. So I found a purport that mentions Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. It's from the fourth canto, chapter 2, text 18. Here's the verse. And the context is it's Daksha cursing Lord Shiva. The demigods are eligible to share in the oblations of sacrifice, but Lord Shiva, who is the lowest of all the demigods, should not have a share. This is Daksha's curse. And here's the purport. Because of this curse, Shiva was deprived of his share in the oblations of Vedic sacrifices. It was due to the curse of Daksha. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti comments in this connection that Lord Shiva was saved from the calamity of taking part with other demigods who were all materialistic. Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it is not fitting for him to eat or sit with materialistic persons like the demigods. Thus, the curse of Daksha was indirectly a blessing for Shiva, would not have to eat or sit with other demigods who were too materialistic. There is a practical example set for us by Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who used to sit on the side of a latrine to chant Hare Krishna. Many materialistic persons used to come and bother him and disturb his daily routine of chanting. So to avoid their company, he used to sit by the side of a latrine where materialistic persons would not go because of the filth and the obnoxious smell. However, Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was so great that he was accepted as the spiritual master of such a great personality as His Divine Grace, Om Vishnupad Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. The conclusion is that Lord Shiva behaved in his own way to avoid materialistic persons who might disturb him in his prosecution of devotional service. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. It just occurred to me as I was reading, both in the translation to the verse and also in the purport, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is mentioned. So when we think of Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, we naturally think of and tend to comment about his illustrious disciple. It is said that he only had one disciple. Actually, if you look at the research, back to Siddhanta Vaibhav, there's a mention of how there were other disciples, probably Grihasthas, not so well known. And I would guess the reason why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said he was the only disciple was probably because he was the only properly following strict disciple. If we know the pastime when Babaji Maharaj left his body, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he argued his case that he could put Babaji Maharaj's body into samadhi. At that time, there was a lot of ruckus. There was so many so-called Vaishnavas. They were looking at this body thinking, if we could have the samadhi at our temple, at our ashram, then we will be able to bring in lots of donations. So the fighting was going on. This is actually the story of Babaji Maharaj's life as well. He couldn't tolerate the association of materialistic people, and he would do anything to avoid them, including, as we heard, he would chant where there was an obnoxious smell. There was one occasion he even threw himself in the Ganges. He'd rather drown than have the association of materialistic people. So it's kind of somehow sad but ironic that that problem persisted even when he left the planet, because people were trying to make a fast buck out of having the samadhi of Gaurgashardas Babaji Maharaj. Anyway, I mentioned this because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati at the time, he said, I am the only disciple, and although I'm not a Babaji, I have not had any contact with women. I'm following strictly by the mercy of Gaurgashardas Babaji Maharaj. Then he challenged the others, if you've not had any illicit connection with a woman in the last 6 months, in the last 3 months, they went down, in the last 3 days, then you can touch the body of Gaurgashardas Babaji Maharaj. But if you've had illicit connection and you touch that body, you'll be finished. Challenge them. Now, at that time, there was a police inspector. He heard there was a fighting going on, so he came there to try and establish order. And he said to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, how will you prove if they say they've had no illicit connection? How will you prove it? And he said, I will take their word for it. And they all just slinked off. They walked away. This is the power of the powerful, these people. They're very powerful. You don't want to, naturally, you feel afraid to cheat in the presence of a saintly person like this. Anyway, so, and as a result, the samadhi was placed in a place near where Gaurgashardas Babaji Maharaj used to do bhajan. And there were a couple of brothers, they were favorable, and they said this land is public land. But later on, they changed their attitude and they said it was private property, they owned it. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati stopped visiting the samadhi because he got so much trouble from these so-called landowners who originally were favorable. Now, the pastime continues that the Ganges, which is always changing course, at one point it started eroding the ground next to the samadhi. So then there was a race against time, and actually there was these landowners, they tried to stop devotees getting access to relocate the samadhi. But fortunately, the samadhi was rescued, although part of the remains of Gaurgashardas Babaji Maharaj floated down in the Ganges. But this is actually his one of his wishes. If you read the pastime, he told Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati shortly before he left the planet that he wanted to be his samadhi to be in either Mayapur or Godruma Dweep. But if that couldn't happen, he wanted to be dragged through the streets so the dust of the Vaishnavas would be on his body and then be thrown in the Ganges. So this, of course, we know the story. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he understood the real meaning of this. He said, the body of Gaurgashardas Babaji Maharaj is so sacred that we would never think of dragging it through the streets. And he gave the example of how Lord Chaitanya carried Haridas Thakur. So he said this was just humility, and actually we shouldn't do this. But anyway, the last part, he wanted to be, you know, his body to be put in the Ganges. Well, part of his remains did get put in the Ganges. And the rest of his body was taken into the Chaitanya Mat, where it is now. We have the samadhi there, which is quite near the yoga pit. And that was the final resting place of the body of Gaurgashardas Babaji Maharaj. So it's a wonderful wonderful story. Going back to this point, he was always intolerable of materialists. There's one example. There was a so-called devotee named Damodar, and he went to associate with Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, and he was actually stealing the donations that were given to Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. Now, this happened on several occasions. Babaji Maharaj, he had this mystic power. He actually could see these things happening. So if anyone came to him and looked like they were a devotee, if they weren't pure, he could see their actual character. And he actually could know if they were, for example, having illicit connection with a woman or whether they were stealing. He could know this. And he often chastised them, criticized them, and banished them. And many times these personalities would suffer severe illness and sometimes even death. So you just wouldn't want to play any games with this personality. He's so powerful that if you displeased him, then your destiny was in doubt. So this Damodar, he was giving money to his father-in-law, and Babaji Maharaj, he chastised him, told him he didn't want to see him, didn't want to have any connection with him. And he was so upset about this that he actually threw himself in the Ganges. And he appeared to try and commit suicide. But he was rescued. And some of the more materialistic people, they misunderstood his motives. They actually thought he was so upset about losing money, and that's why he tried to kill himself. But actually, it was just he just could not tolerate being with materialistic people. So when I was studying the very unusual, very extreme life of Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, I was thinking to myself, what would he think about ISKCON today? You know, and I'm thinking, in many ways, he'd be so, I don't want to get into trouble here, he'd be so obviously delighted that the Gaur Kishordas, that the fame of Lord Chaitanya spread over the world. But in terms of our own individual hearts, because he looked into people's hearts and he was very cutting. So what would he think about some of the way that our society is moving? Because, I mean, if you look at the time when Prabhupada first came to the West, it was a very austere movement. You know, people were sleeping in the corridor, the beds, pillows, hardly heard of. And it was just all day out on the street, devoting your life to try and give Krishna to others. It's a very difficult lifestyle, had a high turnover, it must be said. But and you compare that to what we're like now, and we're not quite on that level. We're not as intense in our bhajan, and not as intense in our preaching as we used to be. So I'm wondering, what would he actually think about this? Would he have harsh words to say about us? Maybe he would. I can't speculate, but that's just what occurred to me. He was kind of like off the map. He wasn't really a kind of person that would deal with society. He's more of an avadut. And as you'd expect, if you look at the amount of work that's been, the amount of writing dedicated to Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Sri Sri Radhago Kulananda Ki Jai, Sri Sri Radha Damodara Ki Jai. There's volumes of literature on their lives, but there's very little on Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj and also Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And that's, I mean, it's understandable because they lived such simple lives. There wasn't so much to say. They weren't like interacting, like, for example, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami there had powerful positions in the government. Bhaktivinoda Thakur the same. And, you know, many of our acharyas were educated. They went to universities, etc. But you take the other example. You have Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. There's not so much that's actually recorded about them. But there is, of course, several books that we can actually turn to get information. There's one wonderful story of how, after the departure of Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, at that time Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he became very, I guess, transcendentally morose because he felt that the mission he had was so difficult to fulfill. He had no funds, no followers. He was lamenting that people weren't listening to him. He didn't have any power over people. So he actually thought about just engaging, being a bhajanandi. On this point, actually, Gaur Kishordas Babaji was officially given the title bhajanandi. His bhajan was so blissful. And actually, in ISKCON, we almost look down on the word, isn't it? You think, oh, no, we're Goshti Anandis. But actually, we're not even on the platform of Gostyanandi. You know, I like what Ayendra Prabhu says. He said, the best Gostyanandi is the Bhajanandi who preaches. So we have to have some substance to actually preach. And we see the example in Gaurakashardas Babaji Maharaj. Although he wasn't an extensive preacher, it manifested because he inspired Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. And then we have all the preachings coming from him indirectly. One time, someone commented to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, he said, you're so different from your spiritual master. He said, you're so active, whereas he was just doing bhajan. And his Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's comment was, he is like the powerhouse, like when you see the boat, the rudder, the motor running. You see the motion, but then there has to be the power behind in order for the motion to take place. So all the activity of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was powered by his Guru Maharaj, Srila Gaurakashardas Babaji Maharaj. So, going back to this example, this pastime, when Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was feeling this depression, by a miracle, a leaf of a piece of paper, a leaf from a book, floated in his direction, and he picked it up. And it was actually from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it was stating, Mahaprabhu stating to the Goswamis, please excavate the holy places, write books, spread Krishna consciousness. So he took this as a sign. And shortly after that, he had a dream. And in that dream, all the previous acharyas, including Gaurakashardas Babaji Maharaj, came to him and said, do not worry, we will back you up. We're here to support you. Just try and spread this mission. And he had the instruction from them. Increase the service of Gaura Kam, Gaura Dham, and Gaura Nam, which means the desire. Gaura Kam is the desire of Lord Chaitanya. Gaura Dham, spread the glories of the holy place. And Gaura Nam, spread the name of Lord Gauranga. So that was like the turning point for Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, and so much was then accomplished after that, and that's all well known to us. So it's said that Gaurakashardas Babaji Maharaj, he took Babaji initiation from Bhagavat Das Babaji, who was a Babaji disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. So this is Babaji line that's going to Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And we also know that Gaurakashardas Babaji Maharaj, he gave Babaji initiation to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But we still call him Thakur, we don't call him Babaji Maharaj, but we could have. But the relationship between the two is it's interesting, because on the one hand, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the Shiksha Guru of Gaurakashardas Babaji Maharaj. And at the same time, he's also giving Babaji Vesh to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In terms of his personality, Gaurakishore did not want anyone to serve him. Now, due to his malnourishment, he started going blind. Remember, he was so austere, so renounced, that he would practically not eat anything. And if he did eat, it would be a bit of soaked rice and mud from the Ganges. So as a result of that, he started going blind. So then Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they tried to solve the problem. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur put him on a diet, but he actually didn't follow it. He just wasn't interested. His attitude was, if you can see Krishna, what is the need for material eyes? If any one of us, if we had a problem like we were losing our eyesight, it'd be very distressing. But if you have inner wealth, if you can actually have a relationship with Krishna, then that doesn't matter anymore. And if you think about it, it's said our senses are a network of paths leading to death. So one way to look at it is, if you don't have good vision, then that you're less likely to be attracted to material things. So it's almost like a bonus in losing the power of the senses. In fact, some Vaishnavas, they like growing old because the senses become weaker, and then it makes them more inclined to look inward. It's only because there's so much wonderful things going on outside of ourselves that we don't think to look inwards. We don't really think to get serious about our bhajan. When we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're not serious about trying to actually experience Krishna in his holy name. And why do we? We don't need to, because there's so much going on out here, you know. But this is an obstacle. So in the case of Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, he didn't care. He could have like saved his eyesight and gone on a proper diet, but he didn't care. But then there was a plan. Plan was Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati would take him to Kolkata and he'd get proper treatment. And when he heard, first of all, he said, I'm not going to Kolkata. He never wanted to go to Kolkata. It was a place of Maya. That's how he described it. And at the very thought that someone would serve him, he disappeared. And for 40 days or so, Babaji Maharaj disappeared. And he came back and he said, I will not let anyone serve me. So they knew you could not give any service to Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. That was his attitude. He was always considering himself to be fallen and not wanting to take any service from anyone. On the point of Kolkata, he gave an interesting instruction to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. He said, promise me you will never go to Kolkata. You will never take disciples and you will never associate with materialistic people. And if you look at the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, he appeared not to do those things because he went to Kolkata and established a temple. He took many disciples. And also because he was a preacher, he was in contact with many materialistic people. But in the words of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, he said, I actually followed those three instructions. I didn't go to Kolkata. I established a temple, which is the spiritual world. I did not take association from anyone. Because if you take the qualities of a person, that's what it means to associate with them. I never took anyone's association. I only followed the order of my spiritual master, and I only took his instructions seriously. And he said, I never took disciples. All my disciples were my guru. I learnt bhakti from them. I learnt from their devotional attitude, you see. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati he followed without following at the same time. It's a wonderful story. So let's discuss the initiation pastime. It's one of probably the most famous pastime of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati taking initiation. It's actually his father, he instructed him, you take initiation and don't come back if you don't get it. Apparently there's some rule, you shouldn't take initiation from your father. So he was obviously a follower of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but Bimal Prasad, as he was known at the time, he then went to Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj and he begged for initiation. And Babaji Maharaj was very, how shall we say, he didn't give it very easily. He had so many excuses. We all know many of the excuses. He just ignored at first. Then he said, okay, I will ask Gauranga. Next time he came back, he said, well, what did he say? He said, oh, I forgot to ask him. Next time he came, he goes, oh, I asked him, but he never replied. And he went on like this. And finally, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, tears in his eyes, he said he would give up his life. He said, if I cannot take initiation from you, I'm going to give up my life. My life has no meaning. And that was when the heart of Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj changed. And he took a bit of dust from his feet. And he put it on his head. That was his initiation. And he gave him some sacred paraphernalia, a tiger skin hat, a stamp, well, two stamps, one with an H and one with a K for Hare Krishna. And in this way, the rest is history, as you know. Here's an interesting story. A lot of the stories, when you read the biography, you'll find a lot of stories are to do with money and an illicit connection with women. And this is a common thread. I've mentioned it already. There was one time a certain personality gave 2 rupees and a beautiful shawl to Babaji Maharaj. And he looked after this very carefully. He tied the rupees in the shawl and he was keeping it very safe. And one onlooker had a doubt. He thought, he seems to be overly attached. So he went to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. No, actually, he went to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati and said, you know, this Babaji Maharaj, I'm not sure if he's really that advanced because he seems to be very attached to this material things. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati chastised him, said, you're only seeing the external appearance. You don't know his real nature. But what happened was Babaji Maharaj, he actually gave these things to another Vaishnava. So yes, he was attached, but he was attached because he was attached to giving this as a gift to someone else, you see. So it said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigya Na Bujaya. One can never understand the activities of an advanced devotee. So Babaji Maharaj was a mystery. And so many people had his association but did not benefit, whereas others had even a little association and they got his mercy. And no one can really understand why that was. That's just the spontaneous desire of Babaji Maharaj. So he was the sannyas in the true sense of the word. So one can be sannyasi, as in have a stick and wear the saffron cloth, but then one can be attached to certain luxuries, for example. It can go on, you know. Babaji Maharaj, he was a real renunciate. He would, for example, he'd sleep under a boat if it was like raining, or he'd live in a hut. There was once a king who was very much, he was actually a follower in many respects, was a follower of Babaji Maharaj. And he said, you know, why are you living like this? I will give you a nice place to live, and together we can chant Hare Krishna together. You won't have to worry about all having a place to live. So Babaji Maharaj's reply was, he said, if I live where you are, I might become attracted to that opulence, and I don't want that. Here's a better idea. I'll build a hut and you come and live with me. And the king never replied. It was obviously too much for him. So I'm reminded, there's a verse in the 11th canto, Kim badram kim abadram va dvaitasya vastana kiyat vachoditam tananritam manasajatam evacha. Now, what is good and what is bad in this material world? It is simply a figment of the imagination. It's simply words and nothing more than that. So that is what real renunciation is. And the 11th canto was spoken, most of it was spoken by Krishna to Uddhava. The bulk of it is the Uddhava Gita. And the reason it was spoken was for Uddhava to take sannyas. So this verse, Kim Badram Kim Abadram Va, it is particularly meant for the sannyasi, this verse. And we see this in the life of Babaji Maharaj. How else could he chant Hare Krishna in the most filthy of places? Because he saw good and bad in this world, it's all a mental concoction. And this verse is also was quoted by Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami. When Sanatana Goswami was oozing pus, he was very upset that Mahaprabhu embraced him. He said, don't touch my body, it's filthy. Mahaprabhu said, for a sannyasi, there is no such thing as good and bad. He gave two answers. He said, your body's spiritual. It's not filthy, it's spiritual. But he also said, for a sannyasi to distinguish between good and bad, that is incorrect. So it said, and he paraphrased this Bhagavatam verse that I quoted, Dvaiti Badra Badra Gyan Sabha Mano Dharma E Balo E Manda E Sabha Brahm. In this world of duality, good and bad, it's simply an illusion. It is a concoction of the mind. There's no such thing as good and bad. It's Brahm. The word Brahma means illusion. So that is the correct way to be a renunciate. Whether you do it as a, you can even do it as a grihastha. Whether you do it as a grihastha, as a sannyasi, as a babaji, that is real renunciation. And that was, if we want to take one particular lesson from Babaji Maharaj, that would be it, I think. His standard was just so advanced, from day to day, he just wouldn't know what he was going to eat, wouldn't know where he was going to sleep. He was like the Goswamis, different. He'd sleep under a different tree each night. And as I say, if it rained badly, he'd sleep under an upturned boat, like that. Now, as we know, and this is all one of the very interesting parts of the relationship between Babaji Maharaj and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, was the extremes of learning. In terms of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was the greatest of scholars, and Babaji Maharaj was illiterate. And that was actually one of the reasons that Babaji Maharaj did not want to give initiation, was he said, you're such a scholar, why would I give initiation to someone like you? You know, this is going to be the cause of pride. And it's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in his own words, he said that he never felt complete in this world, even though he had accomplished so much intellectually. And it's only when he went to Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj that his pride as a scholar was defeated. And he realized that this person has such wealth that everything I thought was of value is meaningless to him. What wealth does he have? So that, he was just, it transformed the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. He realized actually all my scholarship is for nothing. And he said, before I'd only ever written books about subjects other than bhakti. But we know when he was about 26 years old, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, he made a vow, he made a determination. He would not engage in any mundane subjects anymore. He just devoted himself entirely to devotional service like that. So I was reflecting on this, that it said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Eka Bhagavata Bada, Bhagavata Shastra, Ar Bhagavata Bad Bhakta, Bhakti Rasapatra. There are two Bhagavats, Book Bhagavat, which is the great one, and then Devotee Bhagavat, who is Bhakti Rasapatra, who carries the Bhakti Rasa in his heart, you see. So Gaura Kishora Das Babaji Maharaj, he was the personification of Bhagavatam. He was person Bhagavat. And there's an interesting pastime which you can read in the book Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, written by Bhaktivikasa Swami. It's the biography of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. He recalls how one time Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was asked by Gaura Kishora Das Babaji Maharaj, so what is in the Bhagavatam? Because he couldn't read. What is in the Bhagavatam? And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, he laughed. And he said, whatever I read in this book, it is there in your personality. So Babaji Maharaj, he was complete. Even though he couldn't read, he was complete because he had actually attained the purpose of the Bhagavatam, which is prema. And it's there in the pranam mantra. It's vipralamba rasambodhi. So rasa ambodhi means an ocean of rasa. And what rasa? Vipralamba, which means separation from Krishna. So if you look at the pranam mantras of our recent acharyas, they all have the word Gaura in them. Gauravani Pracharani, or Shri Gaura Karanu Shakti Vigrahaya Namastati. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati is the personification of the mercy of Gauranga. Or Gauravani Shri Murtayi is the embodiment of the instructions of Gauranga. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where does Gaura appear in his mantra? Anyone know? Gaura Shakti Swarupaya. He's the embodiment of the Gaura Shakti, which can be understood to mean that he is an Angsha of Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit is the Swarup Shakti, the Swarup Shakti of Radharani, is the Shakti, the Gaura Shakti, which is Radharani. And it's said that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati saw Gadadhar Pandit personified in Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Gaura Shakti Swarupaya. And Gauravir Bhava Bhumistvam Nirdishta Sajjana Priya. Jagannath Das Babaji is known for being the person that discovered the birthplace. So that's Gaura mentioned. And then in this verse, well, it's only mentioned in the terms of his name, Gaura Kishore. But the connection to Gauranga is very much prominent in the word Vipralamba, because this is the Sampradaya, our Sampradaya, the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, which in one sense is a fifth Sampradaya. If you look at the Harmonist magazine, it was described that the Lord Chaitanya is like inaugurating a fifth Sampradaya. In one sense, we are the Madhva Sampradaya, but in another sense, it's a fifth Sampradaya. And then the original gurus are the Goswamis, and the Sampradaya Acharya is Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. This is how it's described in the Harmonist. Each Sampradaya has a Sampradaya Acharya, whether it's Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Nimbarkacharya, Vishnu Swami. But if we consider the Gaudiya Sampradaya to be a fifth, then Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was considered to be the Sampradaya Acharya. And they all have an original guru, whether it's Sri, the four Kumaras, whether it's Brahma or Shiva, they are known as the Adi Guru. So in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, the Adi Guru would be the six Goswamis, if you want to look at it that way. So And I'm just making the point that if you look at the pranam mantras of our Arisana Acharyas, it's all about Gauranga. Gauranga is the essence, and that's the important part. And I'll conclude with a little reflection about, as I mentioned, how Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj is illiterate. And I think, for me, we have to be careful about how our mission goes, because studying books is very important, and we are increasingly, as a society, becoming education-based, which Prabhupada wanted, and initiation is all about we have to get education and so forth, which is all very important. But we have to also remember that the more we emphasize education, there's only 24 hours in a day, so we have to cut back on something else. And if you look at Prabhupada's, how Prabhupada set up this movement, it was like education. Yes, there was a morning class, evening class, and then out on the street preaching. And at that time, there was one Prabhupada disciple decided to change this program. And at his temple, he had devotees just studying Prabhupada's books 5-6 hours a day. And when Prabhupada heard that, he actually criticized that. He said he didn't want that. He said you should do, you know, you can have maybe an hour in the day, hour in the morning, hour in the evening, and the rest of the time preaching. So the point I want to make is we have to be careful that we don't take preachers off the preaching field and put them in a classroom in order that they get their examination, in order to get their initiation. I mean, Prabhupada obviously wanted Bhakti Shastri exams, but he also wanted us to do other things as well. So it shouldn't be one or the other. Ideally, we want to do both. And the reason I say that is because I see sometimes devotees aren't very inclined. Maybe some of them, it's actually due to damage. I know one devotee, she has like slight brain damage, mild brain damage. It makes it very difficult for her to study. I know another devotee who's dyslexic, very difficult for them to study. And we have to be careful that we don't kind of put these people off. And we understand, if you look at actually what Prabhupada said, and it's quite interesting what he said. He said, this movement is based on three principal things: dancing, chanting, and taking prasadam. And then he would say, and if you want, notice, if you want, we have philosophy. If you need to be convinced, we have the philosophy. Now, these four things are what characterize the Bhagavat Marg, and ISKCON is really devoted to the Bhagavat Marg. But of those four, the philosophy is the one if you need convincing. Now, Prabhupada was also very eager that we did read the books for another reason, because if you know the books well, you can preach well. And so if you look at the reason why Prabhupada wanted us to read books, you'll find two main reasons. One is so that you become convinced, because Siddhanta Baliya Chitti Nakaro Alas Iyahoiti Krishna Lagi Sudrida Manas, Kaviraj Goswami says, if you study Siddhanta carefully, do not be lazy about studying philosophy, your faith will become very, very strong. And that's what we need. Personally, we need to be strong in our faith. And also, we need to be very able to convince others, which we can only do if we know the philosophy well and we're strong in our faith. So that's one of the main reasons Prabhupada asked us to study his books carefully, is so that we'd become strong. And the other reason, so that we can convince others. So the point I want to make is, if as a movement we become so educational based that we just all read the books and we don't preach, then half the reason for reading the books is lost, because we're meant to take that knowledge and give it to someone else. And as we all know, as we should know, when knowledge is not given out, it is lost. If you look at the birth of Krishna, there's a symbolic meaning that it is said that when Krishna's in the womb of Devaki, it was compared to a flame covered by a pot. He's in the house of Kamsa. A flame covered by a pot, or like knowledge that's not been distributed by someone who has knowledge but doesn't want to give it out. So the idea is that it is a crime to have knowledge and not give it out. So preaching must go on and study of the books must go on. But we should be very careful we don't stop people preaching in the name of getting their degree or whatever, their little Bhakti Shastra or Bhakti Vaibhav, etc. Because that can... Anyway, I've said enough. Hare Krishna. And it's quarter two, so I've run a little bit over, but we're fasting, so I think it's okay to do that. And please excuse my faults. I try to convey some things. And I'd be very happy if anyone else wants to add some further things or if you have any questions.